IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Brenda. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Greg.
You have an opinion as it relates to, I suppose, the conversation, and you hear the comments, not just on the radio, but I'm sure you hear it in general conversation about payments that Ukrainians are receiving, payments that Irish are receiving. We heard from one listener a little earlier on that says, look, it's not really how much they're paying, it's just everyone or being paid. It's just that it's different rules for different people and everyone should be treated the same. What's your view?
Yes, well, I think the whole issue around Ukrainians is not what they are actually getting in payments. It's what the Irish people themselves are not getting. And it's clear to see that if that's the case, if Irish people, this is causing a rift. And if Irish people feel that this is a one-sided thing, then these are due to government policies that have been introduced. And it's quite easy. The solution to that is don't vote them in again if you're not happy with the way things are working out, because people in Ireland, the ones that are working and paying all their taxes and doing everything right, seem to be getting hammered the most. And my query, my problem is that they're taking it out because the rift is, because the difference, there's a rift now, it's getting bigger and bigger every day, that people are taking it out on refugees, and that's not right. These are Christians fleeing from a war-torn country. They've come here to ask for help. They've lost their homes. They've lost members of their family. They've lost their livelihoods. And most of the Ukrainians that come here are actually trying to contribute to the Irish society as best they can. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the language barrier is a problem for some of them, but most of them are actually trying to do their best. Can you imagine what it would be like if you had to uproot your family and go to a completely different country and start a new life?
No, but also, I've said it before, Brenda, you know, like, if bombs were dropping in Longford, right, and whoever was dropping the bombs in Longford had the ability and the threat they had in the past to send missiles to land in Donegal, I'd try and get my children out of there. I mean, you could say, right, it's Longford that's getting bombed, Donegal's grand, but in the absolute pursuit to make sure that my children don't get blown to bits, if I try and really put myself in that headspace, would I move? I probably would, especially to, obviously, they're not living life even in the areas that aren't constantly under bombardment. The life is not exactly like the life we live here. Obviously, there's lots of power cuts which aren't reported anymore. There's problems with water and other infrastructure. But you asked, put yourself in that brain space. I am. And I think I would say I have to protect my kids.
Exactly. And that's all they're trying to do. I mean, people who are parents would understand this a lot better. You know, you do anything for your children to keep them safe. And that's all these people are trying to do. The payments they get are what the government has introduced. The payments that Irish people are not getting is due to policies that the government have introduced. So therefore, if you have a problem with the way things are going, then, I mean, you just don't vote for them again, because it's as simple as that. These people didn't come here by choice. And I think the ones that are here have been welcomed by the majority of Irish people, and they've tried to fit into society as best they can. And
I would just love if the conversation was, and I actually do believe that the authorities have a role in this, because there are some people that feel that this decision was made in advance of an election for that reason, okay? But I'm not saying that that's what some feel. But, like, I would love if there was an actual open conversation, because what's happening now is, right, people are living their lives here and they've lived here the whole time. They can't get a medical card. They're €5 over the limit. They can't get to see the GP. The hospital's in crisis, they would see it. And then there are a couple of things that are attributed to every Ukrainian here. A, they're driving fancy cars. B, there's no tax or insurance. They're able to do whatever they like in these cars. C, they can get the cars fixed whenever they want. That they are effectively, all of them, back and forward on holidays or for medical treatment to and from Ukraine. And so on and so forth. But there's no information out there to put a figure on that, to counter that, to say if it's true or not. It's just in a vacuum. And if I really feel oppressed in my life, okay, the humanity might be replaced by anger at some of those things that are constantly mentioned. Does that make sense? Yeah. Do you understand the point I'm trying to make?
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand why the Irish people are so angry. Obviously, all these things are happening. But I can tell you one thing. If the government had the same benefits going to Irish people who have worked here all their lives, they would have no problem about Ukrainians or any other type of refugee coming here. It's the fact of the disparity between the two sections of people. So that's really what's causing the ill feeling, shall we say. And I don't think it's fair to take it out on people who have their mothers, they're trying to protect their children, they're trying to do their best, and any one of us in that same situation would do exactly the same.
Right, okay. Brenda, I appreciate you coming on, because on any issue at all, but especially when it involves individuals, I do as much as possible like to hear different points of view on it, because that's, I think, on everything is what we need, and somewhere in between maybe there's an agreement or the truth or whatever. So I really do appreciate it, as I do appreciate everyone who texts in, but I hope you understand what I'm saying. Thanks, Brenda. I really do appreciate that. David Martin is Head of Communications at the RSA. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning.
Right, so what exactly is coming into effect as the regulations on e-scooters, and they're not, it's a broader term than e-scooters, but when they're actually come into effect, what changes, what happens?
Well, I suppose the big thing is we've seen an increased use of e-scooters over recent years, particularly in towns and cities. As of Monday, they will be legal for use on Irish roads for the first time. And many of your listeners may not be aware of that, but there are some regulations governing their use. So I suppose I'll give you a few of the headline ones. There's going to be a speed limit of 20 kilometres per hour. So you will not be able to travel faster than that, and you can incur a fixed charge notice if you do. The other big one, I think, is there's an age limit. So you must be 16 years of age or over in order to use one. And anecdotally, I see a lot of kids using these. I'm based in Cork City, so you do see a lot of younger people using them. As of Monday, they won't be able to use those e-scooters. So that will be a conversation that mum and dad will have to have over the weekend. They're allowed to be used on the local, regional and national roads, and they can use bike lanes as well, cycle lanes and bus lanes.
Is there any compulsion to use bike or cycle lanes? Whilst they can, go ahead.
No, it's advisable to use and use them. If they're there, use them. You know, I'm a cyclist myself, and I suppose if you think, just think of e-scooters as you would cyclists. If you know, and you know, that's kind of the same rules and regulations apply. So whenever I'm cycling, I will use a cycle lane because it's just, frankly, it's safer. Mm-hmm.
When do the regulations actually come into force? Sorry, it's next week.
They actually come into force on Monday. Yeah, Monday the 20th.
From the 20th of May, I can go buy a scooter, providing it doesn't go over 20 kilometres per hour. I'm the only person on it. There's no seat on it. The wheels are the right
That's
size
right.
and what have you. And I can
yes.
go on any road in the, obviously except motorways, dual carriageways. I can just scooter on any road in the country as long as I'm over 16.
Absolutely. Yeah, and as long as you're over 16 and, you know, you obey the rules of the roads like everybody else. You know, it is a change. They've been very popular, and there's been a huge increase in their use in recent years. And look, we've all seen that the people, we've seen them being used on footpaths. They won't be allowed to be used. They're not allowed to be used on footpaths as of Monday. And that's been a bone of contention, obviously. So it's really all about getting road users to interact in a better way, in a safer way, to make the road safer for everybody, and get the e-scooters into the cycle lane, get them onto the roads, travelling at a reasonable speed. Look, they're an easy and affordable way mm-hmm. to get around.
Okay, so if I have an e-scooter, you know, if I have an e-scooter that can exceed 20 kilometres per hour, but I drive under 20 kilometres per hour and I don't exceed that speed limit, is that e-scooter legal?
Technically, it's not. But I think if you are behaving well and you're operating within the speed limit under 20 kilometres under, I think you'd be okay. There's going to be a bedding in period over the coming weeks and months. I suppose the priority will be to get e-scooter users off the footpaths, get them to slow down, and then the technical specifications, we can look at that. But yes, technically, if they are capable of going more than 20 kilometres per hour, they don't meet the regulations. But how rigorously that will be enforced as of, at the outset, it might be a challenge from an Garda Síochána Cónaithe's point of view.
Yeah, I think so. And really effectively, the rule of thumb is it that wherever you can't go on a bicycle, you can't go on an e-scooter.
Exactly. Exactly. You look, they have become very popular, as I said, but also that's resulted in, you know, there have been fatalities on Irish roads and over the last number of years. There have been 5 deaths between 2020 and 2023. Mm. Thankfully, none this year. And a lot of people have been injured as well. There's been 112 serious injuries. So look, it's a modern phenomenon. They're here to stay. And it needs to be regulated. And we've worked very closely with the Department of Transport. Yeah. We've got a big ad campaign breaking on Monday, just trying to educate people and inform them about the new regulations and getting people to change their behaviour. Those people using them, change their behaviour to make life safer for everybody, really.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think a lot of people have been waiting for this legislation before they pull the trigger. In different parts of the country, there's different adoption rates, you know, cities and what have you. I mean, we could have a situation, really, whereby from the time of this legislation coming into effect, that lots of people could start commuting to and from school on the main roads on scooters, providing they're over 16. Is carrying your school bag classed as carrying goods?
That's going to be a moot point. I think in the spirit of the
How
law,
is it
I
moot?
Think
Sorry, David.
You'd be fine.
Okay, right. You so know, if it's
well,
a backpack,
because you're not supposed, you know, it's you know, you're not supposed to carry goods or material or commercial stuff or anything like that. If you have a school bag on your back, I don't anticipate that you would be pulled up for doing so.
Right.
But
okay.
Again, this is all new. It's all changed. It'll bed in. But you know, we'll see how things pan out.
There's no at this point. Then there's no plans for registration. No plans for insurance. Presumably, instances, the same rules would apply between a collision between a car and a cyclist, God forbid,
absolutely,
and a car and e-scooter. Whatever happens already with bikes, that pertains also to scooters.
You've got it. That's exactly it. Yeah, absolutely, okay. 100%.
Quick final one. Any update on when the RSA is going to start providing this road traffic collision data to local authorities? I mean, obviously, I don't think I'm springing this one on you, David. You'd be all across that. It's a big issue.
No, it's
covered
a priority
in prime time.
First.
What's the story?
We're working as a priority. We were in with the on Taoiseach Simon Harris, and it was discussed at length there. We are doing everything to make sure that we have it in place before the end of the year.
One other question. Sorry to hip-hop between helmets. I mean, there's a misnomer, actually. As far as I'm aware, you're actually not legally obliged to wear a helmet on a push bike, which I think is crazy. What's the story with helmets on e-scooters?
It's the same. You're not obliged to wear a helmet on an e-scooter, but we strongly advise that you do so.
All right, I'll let you go. I know you've lots of appointments, David. Thank you. David Martin, Head of Communications at the RSA there. Do you have to wear a helmet on them? No, I can answer that. If e-scooters are not insured, who pays the damages if a person is hurt? What happens now with bicycles? It's the same. Are e-scooters allowed on footpaths? No, they are not. It's the same rules as bikes. Two youngsters aged 13 and 14 passed me on e-scooters on the footpath on Main Street, Buncrana, nearly lifted me off my feet. Didn't hear them behind me, no bell or anything. They shouldn't be on the footpaths. They shouldn't be on scooters for first. Now, you may not be inclined to want to call the guards, but that is a Garda matter. You know, it's a Garda. Would I call the guards? Probably not. I'd effing blind and then forget about it. But it is something that shouldn't be done. And the Gardaí, whether they like it or not, because they're busy enough as is, they... But I just really find... I can see an explosion of these things now. I mean, like, I'm tempted to see if I can gather up the money for one, because I wasn't really aware that you'd be able to use them on the roads, but anyone can use them anywhere now, effectively. If you're over 16, you don't have to use the cycle lane. You can go on any local, regional, national road. You literally could scooter, e-scooter, if you wanted to, from Ballybuffet to Donegal Town, for an example. As long as it doesn't go over 20 kilometres per hour. And really, effectively, they should be treated as bicycles. What do you all think about that? I think we're going to see a ton of them all over the place now. I mean, this is quite... there's not an awful lot that changes quite significantly in terms of sort of the traffic on the road and what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I know we've been talking about it and I knew it was coming. Just in relation to people from other countries driving their vehicles here, all cars that are here, must be taxed and insured. Whether it's displayed or not, it depends on the country of origin, right? So if someone from France, let's say, just because I don't want to keep saying Ukraine, but if someone from France comes over here, they drive around in here in compliance really with, you know, if there's no tax on a car in the displayed on a car in France, it doesn't have to be displayed on the vehicle here. The same with insurance. And there is a derogation at the moment. How long that lasts, who knows? That people over here from Ukraine, they have to have the car roadworthiness, they have to have tax and insurance, but the rules are different in Ukraine as to how it's displayed and what have you. So just the fact that you see an absence of documentation, it doesn't mean it's not there. That's just the that is just the way it is, whether people like that or not. Welcome back. In studio, we have Gary McPeak, who's a special needs assistant and fundraising coordinator at Scoil Isigan in Buncrana. Good morning to you, Gary.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for joining us. And with you today is Louise Kelly, who is a music therapist also at Scoil Isigan. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you down. We're speaking ahead of a fundraising charity football match, The Lark in the Park. It is the sequel, which sounds, this time it's personal, which we're going to get to that, but I want to sort of lead up to that so we sort of learn the kind of work that's done and what was achieved with the first fundraising, if that's all right. And I would like to speak to you first, Louise. Mm-hmm. A music therapist, can you describe your work and how it helps our children?
Absolutely. I always start, Greg, by actually saying what music therapy is not. I think that's a good way to start it, because I think a lot of people have a misconception and they think that we go in and we teach children music or that we maybe perform to mm-hmm. the children, and that's not what music therapy is. So we are qualified to master's level, and really music therapy is about communicating with children, obviously using music, and it's working on social skills, emotional needs, you know, maybe some physical things, behavioural issues. And it's starting, for me personally anyway, it's a very child-led approach. And sometimes when you say that, people might think, oh, so you let the children do what they want, you know, when they come into your room. And it's not that at all. It's about meeting the child where they're at. So for example, a lot of the children I would work with are maybe pre-verbal or non-verbal. So there's no point in them coming into my room and me giving a lot of verbal instructions or, you know, forcing things. So it's more about meeting them where they're at, picking up. We're very astute to like musical cues, little sounds they make, maybe little movements that other people wouldn't pick up on.
Yeah.
And we build a relationship from there, basically, yeah, with the help then of the instruments, with our voice, with percussion instruments. And that's really the basis.
And you
of it.
Would see with the children with learning disabilities, autism, and others as well. Mm. You see the improvement with them over the period of time you spend with them.
Massively, massive improvement, and you know it has so many benefits. And again, every child is different, and we have to look at it individually. They can come to me individually, so we'll look at the aims of what we're working for, and that might be just simply to help with language development, mm-hmm. might be to help with maybe social engagement, so they might have difficulty with their peers in classrooms, and loads of different things. Or we might then go in and do group work within the classes. Mm-hmm. So we have, about 12 special needs classes within Scoil Isigan. Mm. It's a mainstream school with a special needs unit, so it's very inclusive. So I would do work then maybe within the bigger classes. So we're working on social skills, being able to tolerate each other, communicate with each other, have fun with each other, all those social skills.
But also too, I presume, with the one-on-one work that you can do, that then carries through into the I was going to say group sessions or yes, whatever the terminology is. So you're working with the individual, and then the natural transition then is to the wider school community.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And then we also do work within at the mainstream classes as well. We developed a program, Resilient Rhythms, post-COVID.
Is it easy to explain the science of how music is used to sort of trigger the responses from the children and to sort of address some of the things we've been talking about. I imagine it's incredibly complex.
It's incredibly complex, but I suppose, like, music is a universal language.
Yeah.
You know, we all get it, we all feel it. And I always say where music or where words fail, music speaks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very non-judgmental space.
Yeah.
And
music is one of those things, like, well, for me anyway, everyone's different, right? But music and smell. So, like, if I smell something,
mm-hmm.
it can literally transport me somewhere, right? And the same with a song. Like, I can hear, and I know you're not talking about necessarily songs, Louise, but, like, I can hear a song and I know it means something, right? But I haven't actually been able to figure out what it means.
Okay.
And then down the line, you can dig it out and you know that it was a memory from maybe it was the first song I played when I started a new gig as a DJ in a nightclub in Ballyshannon. Do you get me?
Yeah, like, I totally get
it.
Yeah.
It's just locked in there somewhere. And it actually, there is an emotion that comes, and sometimes I have to find the trigger of the emotion.
Mm-hmm. And that's where a music therapist might help. Now, I work specifically with children, but there are other music therapists who work.
This is all very positive for me, by the way. Sorry, I should just point that out. It's a lovely feeling, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, as I say, I work with children, but there are music therapists who work with adults, mental health, or even just people who come in for that reason to kind of dig a wee bit deeper and find out what's the reason behind this, why am I feeling this way. And, like, intrinsically, as humans, we are all musical. We have a heartbeat, we have a pulse, and it resonates very deeply. And it's a universal language.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if we know what the words are, but we know what we feel.
Gary, your work as a special needs assistant also, obviously you work as a team. I imagine, you know, what you do works, you know, Louise can use and vice versa, use is the wrong word, but you know what I'm on about.
Yeah.
You work together in what you're doing.
Yeah, I very much. I think there's a great culture within the school for inclusivity, and the music therapy is another aspect of that.
I think sometimes when we talk about inclusivity, right, we go to instantly that the individual child becomes included, but really inclusivity is that every child's included, isn't it? How did you end up getting this role of fundraising coordinator?
It was accidentally.
That's always is, isn't it?
That's always especially in Skyleasigan.
Gary put his hand up there. No, I'm scratching my head. Right, you're the fundraising coordinator.
Something like that. Yeah. No, it was myself and colleagues, Caroline Donaghy and Jonathan Adair, had a conversation about how we could maybe revamp the existing sensory room.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to have a charity football match with a local team that I used to be involved in, an over 35s football team, Clamanny Celtic. And Jonathan said that he would gather up between teachers and SNAs and former pupils a team. And it was a great success.
Yeah, a huge. And you showed me some of the pictures of this sensory room. It's not how I'd envisaged or imagined it. So talk to me about the room. It's located within the school, right?
Yeah.
Okay, talk to me about that room and how it's used to the benefit of the children.
Yeah, so let's just say a child is maybe overstimulated or having a bad day. The sensory room provides a really safe space for them to go and regulate themselves and come down a wee bit. And then when they go back into class, 9 times out of 10, they're in a better place. Through taking kids into the sensory room nearly every day when I'm working, you can see the energy change within the child straight away. The colours and the vibe and the textures of all the stuff that's inside the sensory room really does calm them and soothe them and put them in a better place. You know?
So just a message to everyone else who supported the first match. This is what, because often we ask people to sort of help or we fundraise and we don't always really see or get an update on what it's achieved. And this is people's generosity and throwing the fiver in the bucket or whatever it might be. And here we are now, young people in and around Buncrana attending the school are able to benefit from this and have a better day at school.
Feel better about themselves. And it really, I've been involved in a couple of different fundraisers over the years, but it really did blow me away. I thought it was maybe a wee bit obscure and that not everyone would get what a sensory room really was. But people in Inishowen, by and large, are just so generous and so willing to get on board with anything that you're doing, you know.
Brilliant. Well, you're asking people to be as generous if possible for the fundraising charity football match Lark in the Park. It's the sequel. It's taking place on Friday the 24th of May in Castle Park. Kickoff is at 7 p.m. Scully's gone again against Clonmany Celtic, and the teams are made up, as you heard from Gary there, of former pupils, teachers, parents, etc. Last year, €21,500 was raised, and of course, Gary and the team hoping to build on that this year. Is there a plan for any funds that are raised, Gary?
Yeah, well, they'll go directly to the music department.
And Louise, how would you employ any money that's being raised?
So,
by the way, Bernie says Louise is so wonderful with the children, and she's a total gift to the school.
Oh, thank you very much, Bernie.
A lift before you answer that question.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, well, I mean, if you saw the space that I was in at the minute, one of the things in Skirlesigan is we, you know, we're a massive school. But every single bit of space is taken up, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a very small little prefab, and it's, you know, it's a wee bit battered and worn, a bit like myself. And the instruments that I started using, I started in Skirlesigan 17 years ago, and we got money then for it. And to be fair, the majority of the instruments are from there, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's time for a revamp. And in fairness to Gary, I heard about all the fundraising and I basically cornered him, and I says, right, you're the man I want to talk to. Yeah. I'm next on the list, you know. So the idea is to revamp the room, you know, clean it up a wee bit. And then, for example, the piano that I've had for so long, a few of the keys are broken. Yeah. We were very lucky. A fella gave us a free drum kit. So, we've other things, but some nice new equipment, maybe some microphones.
What kind of a piano would you need?
Well, I don't like the upright simply because a small space, then you can't see the children.
Lines of sights and stuff.
Yes, so I would use a nice digital Yamaha or, you know, one of those. I mean, again, they're pricey if you want. And all the instruments we use, I mean, they have to be sturdy and they have to be durable, because at the end of the day, they get a lot of use and sometimes they might get moved around or misused. So, and I want to get things like microphones and things that, you know, we can really explore sound and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant stuff. And obviously, you know, the whole idea of this is to kick on with new, robust, sturdy equipment. But that being said, and the reason I sort of wanted to ask what kind of equipment is because I think with people listening to the amazing stuff that you're doing there, Louise, that, you know, maybe someone out of the goodness of the heart would assist in one way or other. And if you do, and you've heard the difference that the work Louise and Gary and the rest of the team are doing, these are children with autism, learning disabilities. These are our children who may have issues with socialising, learning skills. They can improve that through music. There's also children with challenging behaviour, emotional difficulties, chronic shyness, reluctant schoolgoers, you mentioned too, those who have been the victims of bullying. You know, let's not move them around or whatever. Let's sort of work on it, you know, in a way, and get them in there and get it resolved and what have you. So, like, if you have any of the stuff that you think good quality, new, robust stuff that you can help Skirlesigan with, who's to say that person might not be listening to us today, and that can go in addition to any money raised, because it truly is investing in our future, and it could be any of us at any time. So how do people, I mean, obviously you want people to go along to the game, and Gary, are you playing?
I'm not, no, I'm the manager, in inverted commas, which means carry the water bottles.
It's actually worse than I'll be in the nets.
No, I fill up the bottles and just give the pep talk, you know.
Don't even ask if I'm playing, I think we know the answer to that one.
Right, okay. Manager.
I'll help you, yeah, I'll carry the oranges.
We're putting up a GoFundMe link tomorrow.
Okay, good stuff, we'll share that out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So get on to Skirlesigan Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. Skirlesigan Bunkrana, of course. They're going to have a GoFundMe page if you can support that way. It doesn't have to be a fortune, but lots of people can donate a little. I presume you want people to attend. There'll be a gate and maybe some raffles on the day as well.
Absolutely.
And it'll be good crack. It's the 24th of May. It's in Castle Park. Kickoff at 7 p.m. Skirlesigan versus Clonmany Celtic. Who won the last game?
Clonmany Celtic.
Good stuff. What was the score?
2-1.
Boom.
Tight.
Narrow margin.
Okay, so this time it is actually personal. Right, so do you want to, if you want to see if Skirlesigan can avenge that defeat, get along to Castle Park, 7 p.m. Is it this Friday?
It's Friday week.
I am, you know, with the election stuff coming up, I don't know what
What day?
I just don't know where I am. Yeah. I'm sitting here. I don't even know where I am. Right, 21,500 raised last year. And you've heard from Louise herself. And I think it's really important that Louise came down as well. Gary, you would have done a great job. Don't get me wrong. But Louise is there at the Cole Frace doing the music therapy. And it's really good to get an understanding as to how it works and how important it is. And that marked improvements are seen in socialising skills, learning skills. And it's all through music, let's just say.
Absolutely.
There's more to it than that.
Absolutely.
But. All right, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure, Gary and Louise, for having you on the show. I really appreciate you coming down. I hope it's a huge success and I hope you blast through last year's target. But for now, I'll say thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
It is the 9 till noon show. Thanks to Gary McPeak. Thanks to Louise Kelly. We're back after the. Right, a group of hospital consultants in Donegal are again requesting an urgent meeting with the Health Minister. You'll remember, if you listen to this programme, that consultants at Letterkenny University Hospital last year, in really quite an unprecedented move, wrote to Minister Stephen Donnelly expressing serious concerns over the operation of the emergency department, its impact on patient outcomes as well. There was talk at that time of a systems collapse and there were promises of measures to be introduced. And the conversation is always there as to whether or not the model of that hospital should be upgraded. The issue was raised again in the Dáil by Donegal Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. So first and foremost, obviously, I take it that consultants, again, have made representations. They've issued another letter. If you could sort of give us the thrust of that, Padraig, please.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. This letter has been sent on to the Donegal TDs. It was a letter to Stephen Donnelly, Minister for Health. I personally gave him a copy of the letter yesterday and I raised it with him in his presence in the Dáil. So the letter is signed by 17 consultants in Letterkenny Hospital. It deals with a number of matters, but I suppose the first thing I want to say for your listeners is that, as you point out, Letterkenny is a Model 3 hospital, and that means it's a lower level of hospital than some of the major ones we would know, like Galway, Cork, the hospitals in Dublin, James's, Beaumont, Mater, they're all Model 4. In my opinion, strong opinion, Letterkenny should also be a Model 4 hospital, and indeed it's the view of the consultants in the hospital. We have about 26,000 inpatients in the hospital, so that makes it the sixth largest hospital in the state in terms of throughput. It's a major hospital. But if you look at the funding based on just Model 3, comparing Letterkenny to other Model 3 hospitals, we would be the lowest funded. If you compare, for example, to Mercy Hospital, they would have multiples per inpatient than what Letterkenny. And remember,
and just in relation to that, Padraig, because there can be a little bit of number games going on. You need the total invested in the hospital divided by the amount of patients it sees, and it's that figure really that we can compare amongst hospitals, not necessarily the total allocation.
Yeah, the consultants. I've worked for years with a number of consultants in Letterkenny. And they'd ask me to ask questions. Not, this information isn't readily available. You have to ask a range of questions and then work it out yourself. And that's how you directly compare how Letterkenny Hospital, our major hospital, is treated compared to other ones. And we asked about inpatient numbers. We asked about budgets. We asked about nurses, doctors and beds, because that's what it's all about. And I am absolutely clear, and so are the consultants in the hospital, Letterkenny is the worst funded hospital when you compare like with like in the entire state. And it has been that way for years. It's a block funding system. It's been in place for years. So they just add percentage on for every hospital every year. But we can compare like with like in real terms based on the numbers of people we have in the hospital and comparing us as a Model 3 to other Model 3 hospitals, we are the worst treated. So that's just fact. It's irrefutable. And that's made clear again. But what really has caused me grave concern, because we know we're discriminated against, is the issue with the intensive care unit. That's a core part of this letter.
What is the interim proposals being put forward by consultants?
Well, what they're asking for is that they would have the conversion of space that's already there into the hospital into a 10-bed unit. We currently have just 5 beds in critical care. We don't have a high dependency unit, which is very, very unusual. And there's a 6th overflow bed. There's just one single isolation room. I'm just literally quoting from the letter right now. There is no electronic clinical information system. So paper-based systems should have been obsolete 20 years ago. That's what they're operating with there. And then there's recently been audits carried out which shows it is a very, very serious situation in intensive care. So what they're asking for on an interim basis is that there would be the convert an existing ward into a 10-bedded combined intensive care unit and high dependency unit. Now, that's whatever about funding and so on, that's an urgent issue.
But there was plans, was there not? I can't timeline the dates because I don't have it in front of me, to actually increase capacity in the ED. I'm not sure if it was actually sanctioned or not. That never happened. So, in fact, I think we might have lost a bed since then. I don't want to misquote anything. But, I mean, what I'm trying to say is I think it's been recognised that this is required previously. What is the response from the health minister?
Well, he was in the Dáil yesterday and there were statements on healthcare and I was looking directly at him when I raised this issue. And he came over to me when he was leaving and he asked me for a copy of the letter because he says sometimes things can be slow getting to my desk. So it seemed to have a significant impact on him. Hopefully that will be evident soon when he actually meets with the consultants. And he just needs to hear. I mean, there's two things that stand out. Their big ask is an immediate ask is that they can have a 10-bedded intensive care, high dependency unit, you know, that's an existing ward converted. The budget for that is around 1 million euro, but it's absolutely essential in terms of saving lives. These are the people at the front line. You know, all of the 17 consultants, they don't sign these things lightly. I mean, the one, as you know, late last year, it followed over 80 GPs, you know, which is unprecedented in recent times across the state. They expressed grave concern for their patients about the emergency department and wider care at the hospital. Then you had over 20 consultants. This is specific to the intensive care unit, but they repeat again, it's irrefutable. Letterkenny, in terms of funding, is the most discriminated against and failed hospital in the state. Okay. And that's been the case for years. And the minister needs to accept that as a starting point. Right. And when he accepts that, then you start to turn it around.
Well, we'll see what happens. He has the letter in his hand. I get where he's coming from and maybe what he was trying to say in that, you know, a letter might be sent back to consultants saying, you know, we've received your letter, we'll forward it on to the minister. At what stage does he actually get it? So actually, that's... sounds quite refreshing that he wants to get his hands on it. And we can just judge what happens next. Before I let you go, of course, and you'd be anticipating this as Sinn Féin party whip, or maybe not, an opinion poll. I'm losing faith in these opinion polls. But anyway, it has Sinn Féin on 23%. It's like radio. You know, you think, wow, it's great when it looks good. And then you kind of try and ignore the ones when it doesn't look so good. But Sinn Féin at the moment, down another 5 points at 23. Fine Gael up 4 at 23. There's a trend here that I don't think anyone really, really could ignore. Has this triggered a conversation within the party, or might it, do you think?
Well, the most recent poll obviously had us at 29%, and that was only in recent weeks, you know, for the general election. And to me, that was, you know, an encouraging poll. This poll here, I'm very clear what it is. It's a poll of the local and European election. I mean, right now, if you went to somebody's house, they've been canvassed by their local Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael councillor. In a lot of instances, in fairness, their local councillors are, you know, are working hard and would be popular in their communities. And so, you know, if you look at the last local election, which was 2019, as you know, Greg, Sinn Féin had a very bad day across the country. Donegal actually was a good election in 2019 for us, but across the country, it wasn't good. We went down to 81 seats. So if you look at Fianna Fáil, they took around 280 seats in the last local election. It was a good day for them. Fine Gael at 255, Sinn Féin at 81. So you have a massive head start for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael of councillors and elected representatives. So I would expect for us to catch up from, we took 9.5% of the last local elections. For us to be anywhere around 20% in these local elections, you know, would mean we would gain a massive number of seats. So I actually look at this as a poll on the local and European elections, because that's what's happening right now in people's lives.
Do you think it would
be a very good outcome?
Do you think, I think in certain areas, particularly sort of in immigration, migration and what have you, that maybe the public's struggling to see the alternative or what Sinn Féin is proposing? Now, that doesn't mean you haven't been articulating what you believe to be a clear party policy. I'm just wondering, do you feel that that's not landing with the electorate and they're not really seeing on the key issues? And you know yourself, often elections should be fought in a lot of things, but they're not. It's one or two things. Do you think maybe where Sinn Féin stands on some of these key issues is not really clear?
Well, hand on heart, Greg, like I've canvassed widely across Donegal over the last number of weeks and months, and I can see genuinely very strong support on the doors for Sinn Féin, and it's along the lines of the last general election. It's very, very positive and strong across the board. So I genuinely am not concerned about the opinion poll issues. I mean, the most recent one had us at 29%, well ahead of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. But this poll reflects people's voting intentions, in my clear opinion, on the local and European elections. So we're coming from a long way back. For us to be level pegging in the European elections and local elections based on the last time would be a very good day. So like I look at that poll today and I actually find it encouraging from a local and European, right, and everything I'm seeing on the door encourages me.
All right, you know? Then, listen, thank you for that. I do appreciate it, not taking away from the important issue of the hospital, but that's on the record too. Thanks very much indeed. That's Padraig McLaughlin there. Let's go to Neil Richmond, Minister of State for Employment Affairs and Retail Business. It was flagged the last time that new measures were being introduced to assist in reducing costs for small and medium-sized businesses. And you're able to really talk about that now, Neil. It's all been signed off on, agreed on.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. So what was agreed this week by the government is a 15-point plan to support businesses across the country right now. This is going to kick off straight away. We're not going to wait for the budget. More will come in the budget. But the first thing is the increased cost of business grant, which we spoke about before. We've expanded the application day for that by 2 weeks. So far, 2,264 businesses in Donegal have applied for that grant. They're going to receive that grant, but there's still nearly another 2,000 other businesses in Donegal that haven't applied. So there's still 2 weeks for them to apply. But the good news, the double good news, is those businesses that have been approved for the grant, they're actually going to get a double payment. We're going to double the amount of money they're going to get. This could be a payment up to maybe €10,000 all in now with the double payment, which is a lot of good news for businesses, particularly focused at those in the retail and hospitality sector. We'll do considerable amounts now in relation to having an SME test, that any more decisions the government's going to take in terms of policy, we'll put it through the test to make sure it's not going to impact businesses. One thing that I just will touch on, because I know you do a lot of work with the local enterprise office up there in Donegal, it's amazing, is that we're expanding the trading online voucher, that €5,000 voucher, to any business of up to 50 employees in the county. That'll be a real impact. There's lots of other measures to increase access to finance and grant schemes for energy efficiency, for microfinance, much more, all to help businesses deal with rising costs.
One of the problems last time out was sort of maybe even a bit of frustration that you're announcing these schemes, not a huge uptake. What are you going to do to try and counteract that to ensure that as many businesses that could benefit from these actually take them up? Is it more information? Is it streamlining them? Is it clear to you as to why really you're going back with much of the same money again in different ways?
Well, the main thing that we've done is we have actually communicated with businesses. We've gone out to them. We said, look, you're eligible for this. This is money that you're entitled to, particularly in the retail and hospitality sector. And we're making these schemes even simpler. We're making it sure, rather than having to answer 19 questions and provide multiple sets of accounts, to get the increased cost of business grant, Greg, you literally have to tick 4 boxes on a website. That's it. No application. The money's going to be paid out into the accounts direct. There's no need for anything else. We're also, as I said, increasing the eligibility and increasing the amounts available. So previously, with a lot of these schemes, you had to have matching finance. We're reducing that. Say the case for energy efficiency, you can get a grant of up to €10,000, but rather than having 50% matching finance, now you only need to put in 25% matching finance. It's all about getting as much information out there, of course, hence I'm talking to you this morning, hence I'm travelling to Letterkenny on Monday to speak to local businesses, but also simply making it easier, that it is worth business as well as applying for these grants and these fundings.
There's a lot there, right? We can touch on it, and sometimes it's hard to pick up everything from words. Is there a go-to place, Minister, where you know, businesses can look through what's there, what might work for them, what they might qualify for?
Yeah, the main thing, and it's one of the points, we're launching a new national enterprise hub. This is an online resource, a one-stop shop where you can click onto this website and just Google National Enterprise Hub. It's going to be live in a matter of weeks. And every single grant, every single loan supported by the state will be there. You'll be able to follow to see what is most appropriate for your business and what you're eligible for. Also, what will be the easiest for you to apply for. That can be in terms of grants to support training, grants to make your business more energy efficient, or just quite simply the increased cost of business grant, which if you were a business in Donegal today that had paid commercial rates of less than €30,000 last year, you are eligible for that grant right now. Click on a website, tick four boxes, and the money will be in your account in days.
Right, Minister Neil Richmond, thank you very much. We welcome you to Donegal on Monday. Thank you indeed for that. All right, take care of yourself. We're back tomorrow morning from 9, and we're broadcasting live from On Green on Hotel in Burt. Looking forward to that. Take care.